Mental illness is epidemic in America, and the problem is spreading worldwide. It's time for decisive action, because the battle for the mind is part of a much larger war being waged between good and evil, with you as the prize. Welcome to Simple Solutions with Christian psychiatrist and author Dr. Timothy Jennings. For the next hour, we'll uncover Bible-based weapons for fighting destructive feelings and resolving inner conflicts. Dr. Jennings wants to arm you with the tools necessary for achieving emotional and mental stability as you strengthen your relationship with God. We'll open the phone lines for your questions in just a moment. I'm your Simple Solutions host, Charles Mills.
Who knows what evil lurks in the hearts of men? The shadow knows. Thus began a very popular radio program of the third and fourth decade of the 20th century. Discovering what was lurking in men's heart came into full fruition just a couple decades later when what many consider evil itself took up residence in our living rooms. While radio fired the imagination, television fired something even more powerful and changed society forever. Let's talk with Dr. Timothy Jennings about this whole process of entertainment and find out what works for our good and what doesn't. Dr. Jennings, I've heard you talk about this subject before and always find it fascinating. Let's start with a little science. You say, I'm a listener to this program as well as the host, you say that there are two main emotional powerhouses in our brains and that they serve very different functions. Guide us through what you as a Christian psychiatrist have learned about television and our brains.
Yeah, that's a great question. And let's, as we do that, we, as you say, need to lay a foundation first of some of the science of how the brain works so then we can understand the impact that, various entertainments have. A lot of people in our society have come to the idea that we are genetically wired or genetically programmed at birth to be the kind of people we're going to be, this kind of reductionistic thinking. Well, if you got certain genes and you're condemned to be have certain problems and so forth, and generally that's not true. What really is what we're programmed for by God is adaptation. We are genetically wired by God to develop, to advance, to grow, to change based on life experience, things we engage in, beliefs we hold, choices we make. We actually change our neural circuitry, our brain wiring, but also even gene expression will be altered and changed by the choices we make in life. And so we are wired to be to adapt and change. Now, the biggest or the most robust time this happens in life is the first 7 to 8 years of life. It's hugely robust at this point in time, but it happens throughout life all the way through. Now, if we think about this, a child who is born into the world, a child's brain will have hundreds of millions of brain cells or neurons, more at birth than that brain has by the time that child is 8 years of age. There's huge consolidation and rewiring and so forth going on in a child's brain, and the neural circuits which are being activated and exercised and used in the child's brain are strengthened and expanded and retained, and neural circuits which are not used, the brain will actually delete and get rid of or reassign those neurons to do other tasks. Therefore, when we understand this process of neurodevelopment, we can examine what's happening with various types of entertainment to the child's brain. Because as we exercise certain brain regions, we will make those regions stronger. If we leave certain regions idle or dormant, we'll make those regions weaker. Now, the two great regions of our brain that I tend to emphasize are the part of the brain where we experience powerful emotions of irritability, anger, lust, rage, impulses of various kinds called our limbic system. And another part of the brain where we experience love, compassion, empathy, sympathy, other-centered goodness, that part of our brain which is up behind our forehead called our anterior cingulate cortex. And also in the prefrontal cortex, we experience the ability to reason and make good judgments, and it's where our conscience is and all those things. So the part of the brain behind the prefrontal cortex, these higher good functions. These two areas actually can develop separately and differently. We can exercise behaviors that will stimulate the emotion centers and develop those centers very powerfully. For instance, think about a child growing up in a home in which there is abuse going on. And for our listening audience, just imagine that you believe at any moment someone could come in your house right now and beat you severely or rape you. You actually believe that could happen. And with that in mind, you have to take, say, some final exam in college with that threat hanging over you. Do you think your exam scores could be altered by that?
Absolutely.
You see, these powerful emotional centers paralyze or impair the good thinking centers of our brain. And our listening audience, adults listening to this who realize, yeah, that would be true, recognize that it's true for you with a developed brain. Think about an undeveloped brain, a child growing up in a home in which abuse is transpiring. They will have significant activation of their fear centers, their anxiety centers, their worry centers, which will simultaneously undermine the good functioning of their love centers and their thinking centers. So these children in abusive homes will have not only psychology problems and relational problems and self-image problems, it actually changes the wiring of the brain. And we actually have shown this type of behavior also changes gene expression. Various genes get altered in how they're turned on and turned off when children are abused. And so,
Doctor, let me come in here and just ask you, what was God's purpose of the ability for us to adapt? What did Adam and Eve have to adapt to?
Well, see, the purpose was for growth, for advancement, for development. He created free beings in a world of love who could be self-governing and sentient and direct themselves in the process of further development into godliness. And this is, you know, the principle of by beholding we become changed, and the Bible teaches us to fix our eyes on Christ. This is all true as well. God's plan was that these beings created in his image with capacity for self-direction and development will change and become like with that which they hold to, they practice, they engage in, they worship, they admire. And it was his plan. And for us who are redeemed through all eternity, we will always be developing and growing and advancing and gaining new insights, new wisdom, new capacities, new skills. And those will be expanding over time because there's no end to the ongoing development as we engage in healthy behaviors.
But why would God create a limbic system to begin with? Or was this limbic system something that came to being after sin?
Well, limbic system is only unhealthy when it's disconnected or deregulated from the governance of the prefrontal cortex. The limbic system is where we experience powerful emotions of various types, joy, excitement, the exhilaration and thrill of new love. All those things are also experienced in the limbic system. So it is God's design that we experience the full range of human emotion. It's not his design that the emotion centers control or govern the being.
Yeah, got it. Okay, all right. So what God designed really got messed up as sin entered, and what was supposed to be a beautiful growing experience became a debilitating experience, I would have to say, because Adam and Eve, when they heard God walking in the garden, that limbic system must have, you know, clicked in because they were afraid
of
God.
As soon as they sinned, they ran and hid because they were afraid that the balance that God designed was no longer functioning because they believed lies about God, and lies believed will break the circle of love and trust. But back to television. What does television do? So we got this child brain, and I want you to think about the various the difference of what happens when the limbic system is in control of the different functions. If you're on your way home and somebody cuts you off on the interstate and you get an irritable, aggressive, emotional reaction, maybe even to the point that the idea of saying or doing something ugly comes into your mind, that is coming out of your limbic system. If you, as that emotion or idea hits you, you also have from some other place go, no, wait, I'm a Christian, I don't behave that way, and you restrain yourself, and that is your prefrontal cortex.
Okay, all right.
And so the higher Christ-like faculties of our being are those, it occurs in the part of our brain right behind our forehead. Anyway.
All right.
With that in mind,
we have a break coming up here, Doctor. We have a break coming up, and I want to make sure that we give you plenty of time to continue with this. This is important. We've often thought that television wasn't good for kids. Now we are beginning to understand why. And I think you'll find, listener, as you continue with this program, listening to what Dr. Jennings has to say, that you might discover that television isn't all that good for you either. Well, let's find out more on our return. Our phone lines are open for your questions and comments. 800-775-4673 is the number. 800-775-4673. We'll be back with Dr. Jennings in just a minute, so stay tuned.
Here's your Daily Heartbeat with Dr. James Markham. One of the best biblical treatments for all disease is that treatment called exercise. Yes, exercise is actually a treatment. It changes your chemistry. Did you know that when you exercise, you make chemicals that can lower your blood pressure, lower your cholesterol, help you fight off disease? Many other things can help. You might lower the chance of you getting diabetes even. You can help your mental health. Exercise is indeed a treatment. We originally designed to be active, to gather food, to move around. But in this well-mechanized society, sometimes this just isn't happening. We sit around, we don't move. Well, one of the best biblical treatments we have is that treatment of exercise. Try to get 30 or 40 minutes of walking in every day, and you'll start to change your chemistry.
Thank you, Dr. Markham. If you'd like more information, go to heartwiseministries.org. That's heartwiseministries.org.
Hi, this is Jeremy Woodruff. My wife and I happen to be living in Central Texas during the days of David Koresh. One of the stories that surfaced after that tragic loss of life was that of David Koresh punishing an 18-month-old child that would not come to him. He reportedly spanked the child for a solid hour for disobedience. Now, even our feeble human sense of justice can see the inequity there. It's almost sadistic. And yet, tragically, that's how many people view God, desiring to torture sinners forever in hell's flames for the sins of a short lifetime. It just doesn't seem right. Can I really trust a God that would subject his children to that kind of punishment? If you'd like to find the answers to this and many other questions from the Bible, please call 800-775-4673 and ask for a free Bible study course called Discover. God will deal decisively with those who refuse to come to him, but it will be in a way that proves his mercy and loving kindness. Call 800-775-HOPE and ask for Discover.
Welcome back to Simple Solutions with Christian psychiatrist and author Dr. Timothy Jennings. Today we're talking about that little screen you have in your living room, listener, or in your bedroom, that little screen in which the world comes into your house, and there it is. And the history of that screen is running parallel with another rather disturbing history. Am I right, Dr. Jennings?
That's exactly right. You're exactly right. You want to go through that process now?
Let's do that. Okay. Let's do that.
We talked about the two different brain regions where we have our higher cortical functions, reason, capacity for self-restraint, loving other people. And we have that lower region where we have just impulses, passion, drives, instincts, those types of things. Theatrical television. And we talk about television watching. We're talking theatrical television watching. We're not talking about educational television. But with theatrical television watching, you think about it, doesn't matter the rating, R rating, PG, G rating, it doesn't matter. All theatrical television has as its primary goal or function to activate your limbic system, your emotion centers, while simultaneously turning off the prefrontal cortex, the place where you reason and think and use logic. Think about theatrical television. When you watch a program, it wants to get you to laugh. It wants to get you to cry. It wants to get you scared or startled or frustrated or irritated or aroused, or it wants to stir some type or form of emotion up. And there's all different types of programs focusing on different types of emotions. The suspense, drama, thriller, the aggressive, assault, revenge, retaliatory, the comedy. They're all these different genres are focusing on different types of emotions to stir in people while simultaneously turning off the prefrontal cortex. Now, there's a program that television program that some of my friends enjoy called 24. Now, I don't know if you've ever watched it or not.
I haven't seen that one.
But my friends hate it when I'm around, because when I'm around, I'll say things like, "This is stupid." And there was a storyline on this show. This show had 24 episodes a season. Each episode is an hour of the same day. Okay? This is supposedly the premise of the show, 24 hours in one day. And in this one season, the story went something like this. There's this illegal alien terrorist guy who hates Americans, who sneaks into America. He and his cronies are able to get on a high-security nuclear military base, steal a nuclear weapon with its arming codes, go to another high-security facility, steal a stealth cruise missile with its arming codes, get the two of them together in a Midwest farm, make their technicians hook these things up where they can talk to each other and communicate, fire this thing and program and fire it against one of our cities and blow up one of our cities, all within a 24-hour period.
Wow. Okay.
Okay? Think of that. Think that through. And I go, well, think about that. And they go, you're not supposed to Think about it. You're supposed to suspend reason or suspend logic. In other words, in order to enjoy the program, you have to turn off your prefrontal cortex and go through this emotional roller coaster. And so what's happening neurobiologically to people, and this happens to all people who watch theatrical television, is that you exercise your limbic system while simultaneously turning off prefrontal cortex. Now, it's most damaging to children because this is when the brain is in the greatest state of flux, and there's the most significant transformation or changing happening to the brain in the first 7 years of life. But this is also happening to adult brains, and this is a contributing factor to sleep disorders, to anxiety disorders, to mood disorders. Television watching contributes to all of those things, because as you exercise the limbic system without the governance of the prefrontal cortex, you vicariously cause cascade of stress response. I don't know if you saw the movie Saving Private Ryan. It's a true story based on true events of World War II, and many of our listening audience have seen that movie. And if those who have seen it remember, the opening scene in that movie was the Normandy beach landing. And at the Normandy beach landing, they graphically portrayed what that combat situation was like. And people that were eating popcorn in the theater had to put it down because they became nauseated. And as you watch that scene, if they were to take blood pressure readings on you and heart rate readings on you and stress hormone levels in your blood, while you're watching it, your heart rate would be up, your blood pressure would be up, stress hormone levels would be higher in your system. Why? You're not going through some trauma experience, but when you go to a theatrical entertainment, it has the capacity to cause the emotional reaction of your body to be the same as if you were going through that experience. Those emotional cascades actually have physiological consequences that we pay for in our body and ultimately in our neural network. So this is damaging to our bodies and our brains, is what I'm saying, contributing to problems. It's most devastating to kids, but it's also damaging to adults as well.
Boy, you know, as I hear you talk about that, the Saving Private Ryan, again, it was trying to recreate something real, and there's a difference there. And if I watch a program where someone is shot and he falls a great distance, you know, when that's done, I realize that while my limbic system was enjoying that, my prefrontal cortex must have been disconnected. But when I watched the people falling from the towers of 9/11, there was a very different reaction in me. I saw it in my sleep. It bothered me. To this day, it bothers me because I knew it was real. In other words, my prefrontal cortex must have been activated because I was looking at something very real. Am I on the right track here?
Well, actually, not necessarily entirely, because people who don't watch a lot of TV or a lot of theatrical entertainment will have some of those distinctions that you make. But people who watch a lot of the programming don't make those distinctions between the fantasy things that they watch on TV and the real life. Many people actually get caught up. I just heard on NPR yesterday that the longest running television or broadcast drama in history is going off the air, I think, this Friday, Guiding Light. And and of course, I've never watched the program, but I think we've all heard of it. It's been running for 72 years or something like that. Started out on radio and went to television. Anyway, they interviewed some people who've been watching it, and they said they don't understand how this can happen because these people are real. They grew up with them. They every day interact with them on the TV, and you know they're involved in their lives and their stresses and dramas they're going through. And so some people actually connect with their drama characters or react to it as if it is real, and sometimes we lose some of those capacities to make those distinctions. So I think some people can make those distinctions, other people don't. But regardless of whether you actually recognize it's real or fantasy, you still, in the moment of experiencing it while you're watching the programming, your body is still physiologically going through the process. You're having the same cascade of emotional price to pay as if you were going through something like that, which is damaging to the developing brain, damaging to our adult brain, and damaging to our bodies.
What does it
this
do?
Actually
let's
leads,
talk about
this
what
actually
it does.
Leads to underdeveloped prefrontal cortex, overdeveloped limbic system. So children, when they hit adolescence and the hormones then inflame their emotion centers, they're more moody, they're more irritable, they're more emotional, they don't have the capacity for the prefrontal cortex to process that limbic system stimuli. And so they're more likely to act out aggressively, act out violently, blurt out, act out sexually, or turn to alcohol and drugs to calm the limbic system the prefrontal cortex cannot calm. This is a contributing factor to much of the adolescent dysfunction we have in our society today. And I want to be clear.
Do you have any scientific proof for this?
Oh, yeah. Yes, there's multiple studies that have documented this to be true. And I want to be clear that that we are talking theatrical entertainment. And let's talk about some of the studies. First, the seminal study done on this was done in 1992 by a guy named Centerwall, and it was published in the Journal of the American Medical Association. And he wanted to see if there was a relationship between television watching and violence in society, being an evidence of limbic system dysregulation. In other words, we're acting out and don't have the self-control anymore. And he chose three societies to evaluate: the United States, Canada, and South Africa. Now, he chose these three societies because the United States and Canada allowed television to come into our countries in 1945. South Africa did not allow television in until 1974. And then he chose Canada because Canada has very strict gun control laws, and he didn't want any uptick in homicides in the U.S. to be attributed to easy access to guns. And then he, in South Africa, to control for the apartheid racial tensions, he looked at white-on-white only homicide. And this is what he discovered. In the United States and Canada, from 1945 to 1974, the homicide rates increased in the United States 93%, in Canada 92%, and in South Africa during the same time, they went down 7%.
Whoa.
But here's the kicker. Then he looked at South Africa from 1974 to 1987. After the introduction of television, homicide rates, white on white only, jumped 130%. Now, a lot of people have this thought that it's content-driven, and politicians and all these people are always asked these questions. What are you going to do to help parents protect their kids from this violent and bad content? If you watch violent, bad content, you get violent, bad behavior. But if we watch good content, we won't get bad behavior. Wrong. Okay, violent content is only a magnifier of the problem. But even with G-rated programming, you get the problem. What was the rating of the programming on in the United States between 1945 and 1974?
Oh, very G, very G.
All G-rated. We still got a 93% rise in homicide rates. But the programming got worse after 74, and we saw 130% rise in homicide rates when the programming got worse. So worse programming can magnify the problem, but the problem is neurodevelopmental, neurobiological. We actually change the wiring of our brain, overdeveloping the mood centers, the impulse centers, and underdeveloping those parts that self-govern us and restrain us, the parts where we actually experience empathy and love for others. So this is the real damage. In 2007, a further study was done by Christaki and Zimmerman, and it was published let me see, what journal was that published in? It was published in Pediatrics, November 2007. And they evaluated three types of they evaluated violent television and nonviolent television programming, and they looked at whether it had impact on attention problems or focus problems, because if we damage prefrontal cortex, we increase the risk of ADHD, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, because we don't have the prefrontal cortex to attend, focus, organize, and plan. And what they discovered was that television watching of a theatrical violent, theatrical nonviolent, or theatrical R-rated, theatrical G-rated, and then educational programming to see if they had impact on attention. And what they discovered was that both theatrical television of an R-rated nature and theatrical television of a G-rated nature impaired attention or altered neural development so that you had attention problems, whereas the educational program did not have that impact. So it is not a content-driven issue. It is the medium itself. Are we watching theatrical-type programmings?
Huh. Well, I want to open our phone lines right now. I'm sure, listener, you might have a question on this. Here's our number, 800-775-4673. We are learning something here from Dr. Jennings that may be the first time you've heard such a thing. And like Dr. Jennings says, this is backed up by scientific research. This is not Dr. Jennings saying it alone. He has some research behind him. 800-775-4673. 800-775-4673. When we come back, Dr. Jennings, I want to ask you about other forms of media, stage programs, books, the Bible. Are these things able to do the same thing? Because there's a lot of violence there. There's a lot of hate and all kinds of things in those media as well. 800-775-4673. Stay tuned.
Every gardener knows about the paradox of pruning. Somehow, cutting a plant helps it grow. But did you know the same thing is true in the spiritual world, too?
With thoughts from the bestseller Moments Together for Couples, here's Dennis Rainey.
During the last several years, our family has been through pruning times. My wife Barbara has had surgeries and bouts with sinus infections, Lyme's disease. Our son Samuel has been diagnosed with muscular dystrophy. And there have been other circumstances where we felt the painful snips of God's pruning shears. You know, the book of Romans tells us that in spite of how circumstances appear, God does cause all things to work together for good. Pruning may not feel good, but in the process, God is at work. If you're experiencing pain, if you feel like there is pruning going on in your life, well, remember, God, the Master Gardener, is at work in your life.
Moments Together for Couples, available at Christian bookstores everywhere.
With nerves of steel, with incomparable courage, with fierce determination, with uncompromising resolve, the men and women of the United States Armed Forces go forth. And wherever and whenever they go, the USO will be there to touch their spirit, to comfort them, to remind them, to simply and heartfully thank them for the extraordinary gift they give us all. Until every brow is soothed and every hand is held, until every battle's won and every song is sung, until everyone comes home. Find out more about the USO and how you can help at uso.org.
Jesus said in John 14:27, "Peace I leave with you, my peace I give you. Do not let your hearts be troubled, and do not be afraid." Do you long for that peace in your life? Let's return to Simple Solutions with Christian psychiatrist and author Dr. Timothy Jennings.
Welcome back to the program. Charles Mills here with Dr. Jennings. We are talking about entertaining ourselves, and I think, Dr. Jennings, you just set off a few landmines for a lot of people right now, talking about the impact of theatrical television on the human brain and what has happened in the studies that corresponded with the introduction of television. We are on the air now for your calls, 800-775-4673. Let's go to New Mexico and talk to Monica. Hi, Monica. What's on your heart today?
Hi, good morning. I have basically two questions, but they're kind of interrelated. The point is basically is how do you fix that if you've been already, you know, your years of development and you've actually went through that process where your limbic system was more activated. How does that affect, if you made that error? How do you change that? How do you change that back, or can you fix it?
Yeah, absolutely. Great question, Monica. Thanks for calling. The beauty of the way we're designed, the way we're created, is that the brain continues to be in a state of flux throughout our entire life. The most extensive state of flux is during those first 7 years, but that doesn't stop. Throughout our entire life, right now, as you're listening to this program, as I'm talking on this program, our brains are in a state of flux. The choices we make, the behaviors we engage in right now, allows for our neural net to be changed based on the choices we make and the behaviors we engage in. Just like exercising the physical muscles, take your right arm and go work it out at the gym every day for 3 months, and take your left arm and put it in a sling for 3 months, and you'll notice a big difference in those arms. Same thing happens with neural circuitry. If you exercise circuits, they will grow stronger. New neurons will be recruited. The interconnectivity will become more complex. If you leave the circuit idle and don't fire it, over the course of time, the brain actually prunes back the interconnections and actually deletes some of those neurons, so it becomes weaker and weaker over time. Now, the key to this, though, is it's not just necessarily firing it in actual behavior. What we've discovered is if you fire the neural circuit in your imagination, you still send electrical signals through that circuit, and it will keep it strong and even help it grow stronger. So we have to not only disengage in certain types of behavior, we have to stop practicing those behaviors in our imagination. And that's what the Bible tells us when we're told to bring every thought into captivity to Jesus Christ. And if we do that, then the brain will actually change.
Okay. Huh. Okay, so I guess then that leads to my next question is basically how do you apply that to? I work with kids. I'm a coach, and how do I I mean, I don't have a lot of time that I spent with them, you know, but how would I apply that into practice for them? You know what I mean? In the coaching that I do sports coaching. So how do I do that to get them
I think the goal, since you're not the parent, you can't actually directly dictate whether they get access to TV and theatrical entertainment or not, that's something they're getting. One thing you can do is try to educate the parents, put out a letter, an education letter, because what's happening today with kids, the more and more and more of this type of media bombardment, the more and more damaging to their brain. And what I see is it's much worse than when I was growing up. What I see today is not only are they getting it at home, if you drive around the interstate, look at kids, they have these little DVD things on the back of the parents' headrests, and they're watching constantly 24 hours a day some type of media bombardment. So some type of parental education would be very helpful. Other things you can do is, if the kids are old enough to comprehend, try to educate them. One of the things that I did with some kids that I had access to is I gave them an assignment that for every 2 hours of non-media type activity and school and church didn't count. So outside school and church, they had to do 2 hours of something else, play baseball, shoot baskets, play Monopoly with their friends, whatever. 2 hours of other non-media activity, they could earn 1 hour of media activity. So, and it was designed to exercise those other neural circuits. So as a coach, you could give them assignments of some type of practice that they have to do that requires physical activity. When they go home, that would take up some of their time exercising other parts of their brain and diminish some of the time they're simply exercising the limbic system with television watching.
Okay. Okay. Thank you very much for your help.
You're welcome. Thanks for calling.
Thank you, Monica. Appreciate that. You know, I love the way that Monica is caring about the people, the children in her care. I like that. She's a coach. So you're saying that we need to diminish one and increase the other. So let's talk about the activities that we who maybe were raised with television and we would like to make our prefrontal cortex more active and bring our limbic system back into control. What are some of the activities? You mentioned playing games, playing Monopoly. How about reading a book? How about listening to the radio? If you listen to the radio program like Your Story Hour, one of my favorites, Your Story Hour, this is theatrical radio. Are the same things happening now?
No, because when you listen to radio, the radio or storytelling, some listen to grandma read you a story out of a book. Okay, any type of storytelling, even theatrical storytelling like on a radio program, requires you to activate your prefrontal cortex to imagine and create the scene in your own mind.
Okay.
So you're not getting those rapid shifts from scene to scene to scene with that you get with television or movie watching. And so it doesn't suspend the prefrontal cortex, it engages it. And so
if Monica were to tell her kids, you need to go to the library, check out this book about this sports figure, and read this book, she is actually helping that child develop that prefrontal cortex.
100%, absolutely. With book reading, it is directly content-driven. As I said before, with the theatrical entertainment, it's not content-driven. You can watch a theatrical movie with a very good theme and still actually cause damage to the limbic system and the brain. With book reading, though, it's directly content-driven. If you're reading bad content with bad morals and bad themes, then you are teaching bad values that the child is learning through the reading of the book and those immoral content. So you really want good content when you're in reading. So that does make a difference in the content. And some people might have questions about video gaming. And video gaming, it's also directly content-driven. See, in order to play video games, you have to activate prefrontal cortex. You have to organize. You have to plan. You have to anticipate. You have to strategize. You have to be patient and pause at the right times. I mean, all these engagements of the prefrontal cortex to plan all this. The problem with video gaming is content, and there is some foul, disgusting, and vile content out there that actually will cause the brain to cross its circuits against the way God designed it to be wired. For instance, we have a natural God-given wiring to feel disgust or revulsion or guilt at harming other people.
Right.
In video games, we get rewards and points for running over the prostitute, for shooting somebody and killing them, for stealing the money, and all this types of stuff. So we actually rewire the brain to reward things that are evil and destructive, and we become desensitized to that. Now, it's very interesting. You may have heard of a game called Call to Duty.
I've seen that in the video story.
Call to Duty is designed by the U.S. Army. Mm-hmm. And it was designed to entice young men, number one, to the joys of shooting people and joining the military. It was a recruitment tool. And it also is helpful to desensitize people to the act of killing.
My. How does the Army do that? I mean, you were in the military for a number of years. How does the Army do that? Take a guy that's just who wouldn't hurt a flea and turn him into a killer. What happens in the brain of that guy? This is off the subject.
What happens in order to do that is, number one, you have to devalue the enemy. You have to cause the individual to see the person as somebody that's subhuman, somebody that's less human. It's very difficult to shoot somebody and simultaneously have empathy and compassion for them. So you want to turn off the prefrontal cortex of circuits of empathy and compassion, and so you want to really be able to disconnect the person's conscience from their acts in some way. And so that's part of the problem teaching somebody how to now there is a way that sometimes people can be brought into the circumstance of killing where you keep your conscience intact, and that is when they see themselves as a peacekeeper or a law enforcement officer or somebody who has no intention to harm somebody. They will only use it as a last resort to protect, and they're not out to actually kill. Now, in that particular case, the conscience can be intact, and the person can have great remorse and even really not even want to be shooting anybody, but will only do it at the last circumstance to protect others.
Right. But man, when you watch it on the television, theatrical television, you are just disconnecting that. You are seeing that and you are disconnecting it. You don't feel empathy for those people because it's just television. But in the process, you are disconnecting one and enhancing the other. That is dangerous stuff, Dr. Jennings.
Well, yeah, and the video games actually are the prefrontal cortex damage happens from the theatrical television by lack of exercise and so forth. With the video gaming, you actually cause certain circuits to grow stronger because you're exercising them quite actively, but you're not necessarily developing them in a balanced way where you have good moral values. You can actually have strong prefrontal cortex circuits of rationalization, strategizing, organizing, planning, but you have no convinced sense of real right and wrong, and so you can justify all your behaviors while you cheat, lie, and steal from people.
Oh boy. 800-775-4673 is our number, 800-775-4673. If you have a question or comment on this topic, we would love to hear from you. And by the way, I want to bring this in right now. At the commonreason.com website, there is a brand new section called a discussion forum. And if you'd like to, after you have listen to the program and have some ideas you'd like to share with someone, you can certainly go to that discussion forum and talk about this. This is a good topic to talk about on the discussion forum at www.commandreason.com. And also, I wanted to tell Monica about this. If you're still listening, Monica, I know you are. You could invite the parents of certain children that you feel are at risk in this behavior to go to that website and listen to this program. You can download it as an MP3. You can hear it streaming. Just look for this date, today's date, and the program called Media Over Mind, How Television Affects the Brain, and you can give them the opportunity to hear what you've heard. I know, Monica, that you know parents who care about their kids, and you want them to raise those children as they do. They want to raise those children in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. And that's what the website's there for, www.comeandreason.com. And then just listen to the program or Civil Solutions, or you can go on the discussion forum and talk about this. Well, we have a break coming up, and when we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about this, Dr. Jennings. This is an important topic because we as a society are pretty messed up. And we are looking for reasons. And like you say on television, it's not just the content. It is the actual process of watching theatrical television, which turns off our prefrontal cortex and fires our limbic system. I'm glad I have words to say now that identifies what we as parents, we as teachers, as coaches have always felt. There's something happening here. Now we know what it is and how it is and why it is. 800-775-4673. 800-775-4673. Short break, and we'll be right back, so stay tuned.
Too many Christians don't know the truth about dinosaurs, but Christian scientist Dr. Elaine Graham Kennedy is out to change that. Dr. Kennedy is a research scientist who has done field work at dig sites in remote places like Patagonia. She has spent her life studying dinosaurs. And now she has published a remarkable book called Dinosaurs, published by Pacific Press, that is both scientifically based and biblically sound. It answers the questions many Christians ask. Did dinosaurs really live? Are dinosaur bones fake? Who made the dinosaurs? What happened to them? And were dinosaurs on Noah's Ark? Dr. Kennedy's book, Dinosaurs, is filled with interesting facts, photographs, and colorful charts. It is a must for every Christian home and perfect for reading with your kids. To get a copy, visit www.pacificpress.com or call 1-800-765-6955.
I was lucky growing up. I had a strong family and support system to tell me that I could be somebody, that I could do something important after high school. But as I got ready to graduate, I thought, what about other kids who don't have that kind of support? Hi, I'm Regina Grant. I'm 19 years old and a member of the Omaha Nation. I decided to start a mentoring program for Native students. We help kids see that a college education is something they can achieve and be successful in. We also teach them about their Native heritage and where they come from. The young people who volunteer to be mentors in our program commit just 1 hour a week of their time. It's not much time, but it really makes a difference. Couldn't you find 1 hour a week to volunteer in something you believe in? So many people in every community need our help. Get out and live. Volunteer.
Brought to you by the Hitachi Foundation's Yoshiyama Award for Exemplary Service to the Community and this station.
Back to Simple Solutions with Christian psychiatrist and author Dr. Timothy Jennings. I'm Charles Mills, and we're talking about media over mind. We're learning that what we watch, we're learning that we watch on television is not so good for us. What we watch can actually exacerbate the problem. Our lines are open if you have a question or comment on this, 800-775-4673. Let's go back to a question that was asked earlier today. If we grew up, like many of us did, watching the television, theatrical television, even though it was not as violent as it was, as it is now, I can't imagine. I haven't watched television for years, and I can't imagine what's out there now. Sometimes when I go to a motel room, I go through the channels, and I go, oh, my goodness, people are watching this. I watched television a lot when I was a kid. I watched the Westerns, and I watched all these cool sitcoms and whatnot. Dr. Jennings, I want to get better than I am. I want to undo the damage. What should I do?
First off, we recognize that our brains are in a constant state of flux. So if we engage in healthy behaviors, our brains will get healthier. And if we engage in unhealthy behaviors, our brains will become less healthy. So the healthy
now, what things, healthy behaviors I'm, actually I'm go, about to go jump. Right to that problem.
Yes. The healthiest thing you can do for prefrontal cortex development, in my opinion, is open, honest searching of the scriptures for a knowledge of God himself. That is the absolute number one. Nothing else even comes close to that, but an open, honest searching of the scriptures for a knowledge of God himself. Not for figuring out, how many animals were on the ark in total. These types of questions are not relevant. If the question is coming to a knowledge of God himself. Because as we extend our mind and reach out of ourselves in conversation with God, in study of his word, it requires an exercise of the prefrontal cortex. And the prefrontal cortex will actually develop as we exercise ourselves in this way. Studies done at the University of Pennsylvania show that when we meditate on loving themes, altruistic themes, the character of God is revealed in Jesus themes, not God constructs of anger, wrath, and so forth. But when we actually spend time reaching our minds toward a God of love and meditating on a God of love, they can measure in the brain the growth of the prefrontal cortex and the anterior cingulate cortex, where we experience love and compassion and empathy, which directly calms the fear and anxiety centers and lowers the whole stress response and leads to better health physically as well as better mental health. So the number one thing we can do is actively engage in Bible study personally, privately, and also with a group. Go to your weekly church for Bible study time. Bible study time in a group is more important than going to the sermon. Sermons are less important. I will just say that straight up, because the sermons do not require you to exercise your brain that much, whereas the Bible study groups will require you to do much more brain exercise and thinking and reasoning. God actually said in Isaiah 1:18-20, come, let us reason together.
Reason.
Though your sins are like scarlet, they'll be white like snow. He's connecting for us this exercising of your prefrontal cortex. That's where we reason. Come reason. Come think. Come weigh out the evidences. Come get to know me. And as we experience that and pursue the truth, we strengthen prefrontal cortex, which will result in a better governance of those limbic system impulses. So that's number one thing. Number one.
Yeah.
Other things that we can do that are helpful. Obviously, it's important to have a healthy sleep-wake cycle. What we know, you may have heard the old adage, don't go to bed angry, you know, with your spouse or something like that. Absolutely not true necessarily. If it's something that can be easily and quickly resolved, do so. But many times there are things that require a complex discussion. And if it's late at night, what happens is the prefrontal cortex with sleep deprivation doesn't function as well. And therefore, we don't have as good of compassion. We don't have as good of empathy. We don't have as good of ability to reason and think. We're more irritable and moody, and we're more likely to say something hurtful late at night. So the best thing to do actually would be to say to your spouse, hey, sweetie, I love you. We're stressed right now. I'm tired. Let's go to sleep and let's resolve this in the morning. And you'll find when you wake up the next morning with a refreshed prefrontal cortex that you will resolve that without the ugly words very, very much more efficiently than if you would have tried to stay up several hours that night. So sleep, regular sleep is important. Sleep deprivation impairs prefrontal cortex functioning. Anything that causes fear in our life, fear paralyzes prefrontal cortex functioning. So we need to work on removing things that would cause us to be fearful from our lives. Physical exercise is very important. As we exercise physically, the brain makes various neurotrophic factors. Those are factors that make the brains healthy and also improves the vascular flow to the brain, bringing better nutrition to the brain. And thus, as we have a healthier brain, then the brain is able to make those healthy connections as we exercise the proper circuits, and we can make this transformation more quickly. Avoiding toxic substances that that damage the brain, like tobacco and alcohol and drugs and things like that, which interfere with the functioning of the brain, that's important to do. So many, many good principles that actually have brain-impacting function associated with them.
Okay, so if we are looking for activities, they need to be good activities, helpful activities, peaceful activities, or even active activities like playing sports or whatnot, that the outcome is going to make us better than we were. The outcome is going to make someone else better than we were than they were. Those are the kind of things that build up that prefrontal cortex.
Yeah, and if you want to play games, there's lots of games to play. Games can be very helpful to organize, strategize, plan. I know some people get very rigid and legalistic about whether they should play games or certain types of games. The real issue is what are you learning from the process of game playing? In the process of game playing, are you learning certain physical skills, like when you're playing basketball or baseball, which is very important to learn those skills, because we actually now know that the parts of the brain that govern smooth motor movement also help coordinate and organize smooth thought movement. So that's So it's important to develop those physical education and physical skills. Do we play games that teach us how to cooperate and socialize, like team sports, where you have to cooperate with other people in your team? You have to be selfless and share the ball with other people in the team. Everybody has to pull their weight, rather than of a sport that's only about self. Do we learn the lessons of sportsmanship and how to both win graciously and lose graciously? Because life is often about being kind to those who find themselves in a discouraging experience. Because everyone is not always a winner in every circumstance. Or are we learning lessons of win at all cost? Me first, do whatever I have to win. Winning is the most important thing. If those are the lessons that we're teaching, we are teaching the wrong lessons in game playing, and we're actually damaging character. So game playing can help organize, plan, strategize, can help build relational skills as we learn how to instill and inspire coworkers and or our teammates on our team, as we help encourage those who just the player who just struck out. We give the encouraging word. It can build all types of relational skills that can serve us well through life, or it can work against us depending on how we interact in the process of game playing.
Well, I think right about now, Monica's feeling pretty good about her, what she does for a living. Wow. Monica, are you hearing this? You are doing wonderful things for those prefrontal cortexes of those kids in your charge. This coach, our caller Monica earlier, was a coach, and she was wondering, what can she do to help young people? Well, guess what, Monica? When you show up and do what you do with those kids, you're helping develop that prefrontal cortex, especially if you are doing, I'm sure you are, as Dr. Ning says, to play fairly and to be kind and compassionate. And wow, this is good stuff. All right, now one final question before we come to the end of the program. What can I do to help someone in my family, a wife or a spouse who needs this done? What can I do with that person to help them develop the prefrontal cortex?
Well, there's several ways. One is obviously education. Help them understand these facts so they can make intelligent choices for themselves. And you can also use your intelligence to invite them into activities that are going to be more healthy for them, that they might enjoy doing without them necessarily even realizing that you're taking them away from TV. You might invite them to go out for a walk in the evening. You might invite them to, participate in some type of sport, ping pong in your home if you have a ping pong table, types of things. Let's go do this instead. Let's play a game tonight. Let's read a book together. Invite to do other types of activities that will take them away without necessarily telling them what you're doing, and that will build the relationship, it will build other prefrontal cortex circuits, and it can be protective even if they don't agree with the conclusion that television is harmful to them.
Is there a threshold here? Is there a minimum amount of television that's not harmful, or is it just always harmful right away?
Remember, it's theatrical entertainment.
Right,
theatrical entertainment will activate limbic system. Now, there is a way to watch theatrical entertainment that actually is not harmful, but that's not how most people watch it. It's when, like, the person who is teaching drama at a college has students watch it and take notes and critique the various acting styles and acting skills. That requires a constant use of prefrontal cortex to assess the whole methodology of movie making and so forth. Well, that's they're not actually into the movie now. They're not suspending their prefrontal cortex, but most people do not watch television that way.
Okay. All right. Well, my goodness, we had a good time today learning valuable lessons about how we entertain ourselves and how we build and destroy our brain sections. Dr. Jennings, thank you very, very much for this. We appreciate it all. And again, listener, I want to invite you to Dr. Jennings' website, www.comeandreason.com. You can listen to this program again. You can download it. You can go to that new discussion forum that just started out. There's lots of material there. You can also learn about Dr. Jennings' products, his book, and his DVD set. I would recommend them strongly to anyone who cares about their brain. www.comeandreason.com. Well, thank you, listener, for listening, and we appreciate that. Until next week, this is Charles Mills with Dr. Timothy Jennings, inviting you to apply the simple solutions God placed in your heart today. Goodbye, everyone.
Simple Solutions is a production of Life Talk Radio and Dr. Timothy Jennings, and is made possible by your generous support. For more information, visit www.comeandreason.com.